And it is an incredibly beautiful day. I'm going to show you where I am. It might be a little loud out here. I'm actually outside in Breckenridge, Colorado. Can't really see the mountains from here because the mountains are behind me, but I'm out here for a couple days enjoying just amazing. Actually, you could see leaves changing right over here. Let's see. There we go. See, we got yellows. And then there's some oranges back over there and some reds. Time away is a good thing. And so here for a couple of days, just enjoying the fresh air and coming to you live from the porch of my condo here in Breckenridge. It's Joel.live. And if you guys are coming in, many of you are going to be coming into the replay, but those of you that come in live, please remember to share this broadcast. Super easy to do. Just click the little share button down there below, and this will live on for all posterity. It's going to be a good thing that it does because my guest today is going to inspire your socks off. If you don't have socks on, put them on so that you could actually witness them being inspired off. And if you don't wear socks, just believe me, you're going to be super inspired. And we're not going to wait to get into this. I just want to say that if you are watching this on a shared page, this video is originating on the BeLive.tv Facebook page, which is facebook.com/BeLive TV app. The beautiful thing about watching over there is when you comment on it, I can see your comments. I see you, for example, and I can put them on screen. So I could, Tina says, hi. Hey, Tina, good to see you. Gracie Ruth, nice to see you. Catherine, hi, good to see you. What do we got? Shannon is in the house, nice to see you. Priceless Princess Jewel, you are priceless, nice to see you as well. And so the only way I can put your comments on screen is if you are watching on the page of origination, and that page is at facebook.com/BeLive TV app. Go there, scroll down the page, and you know what you'll see? You'll see me. Then you'll know that you're there. And when you comment there, I can see you. All right, let's do this thing. My guest today, Carrie Wilkerson, is a woman that I have known for, oh gosh, I want to say 12 years, maybe 10, I don't know. We'll find out the truth when she comes in here in a minute. She is known to many as the Barefoot Executive. She demonstrated to especially to women how they could work at home and be a mom and be a business person and prosper in all areas. And now she has expanded her brand to be able to reach thousands of people. This is a woman who gets on stage in front of thousands. Sometimes I think she's been up in like up to 14,000 people in an arena, inspiring their socks off. Nobody leaves with their socks on. Her name is Carrie Wilkerson. She's my friend, she's my guest. Welcome, Carrie, to Joel.live.
Hey, everybody.
So good to see you.
It has been right at 10 to 10 and a half years. Yeah.
Oh gosh.
I
But
know. I don't even know how it's possible. I mean, you look older. I don't look any older. As a matter of fact, I think I look younger.
Hey, now, you
I
do
still
look.
have little kids at home. Your kids are all gone, so you're an empty nester, and I'm still a young mom.
That's very true, and you do look magnificent. You've taken really great care of yourself, and I think that that's really important to be able to inspire people is demonstrating, like, and showing, that I've got this. You can too.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons people resonate with me is I'm not afraid to be honest about the fact that I'm a mess, right? I'm a mess like everybody else. And so I let you see my journey. So yeah, the weight battle, the self-care battle, the all those things, financial battles, taking your audience on the journey with you, I think is sometimes the most empowering thing you can do. If all they see is a before and an after picture, they miss all the messy middle, and it doesn't really help them, except sometimes it defeats them. It doesn't always inspire them. So yeah, my audience has been able to go along the journey with me, and thank you. I am taking care of myself because I'm a mom of little kids, and I want to be around for a long time.
Let's I don't want to go into the past too much, but I do want to know, how did you go down the internet business rabbit hole?
Yeah, so I came online maybe 2006, Well, I got my first email account back when you were already been, you'd already been online probably 10 years by the time I came around. But I had a service-based business where I did desktop publishing and I was online without being online. So meaning we were delivering via email. I had a remote sales team. I probably was one of the first virtual assistant companies on record before that was really a thing. We were using telephone dial-up still and doing things with servers in the background and coding ourselves before I even brought the Barefoot Executive online. And a lot of people said, well, how are you doing what you're doing? How are you home during the day? How are you, you know, at all your kids' school stuff, but still making money? And so I started being invited to speak. And that's when you and I met, was when I was invited to speak. And I kind of got pulled into that. I did not intend to be a public speaker. And
where
now
was that? Do you recall where that was, where we did meet?
Maybe JV Live.
JD Alert, Ken MacArthur's conference. Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe one of those. We were on a panel or something, I think. I'm not even really sure. But that being said, I was pulled in to speak and I said, well, I need to help people. So I created the website, The Barefoot Executive, because that was my nickname. And within 10 months, I had an email list of about 24,000 people that said, yes, yes, we get it. We understand. We want to be part of that. So that what is the title of my first book, that brand now has evolved to the Carrie Wilkerson brand for personal development and business growth. And Barefoot Executive is just one part of it. But I am still working here on my bare feet because I am my brand. I didn't create a brand and then grow into it. I created a brand. That was me. That was, you know, who I am. So,
yeah. In fact, let me, I'm going to put your book up so people can see this. This came out in 2000. It's been 2011 already.
I know. It's still valid. It's still valuable. But, you know, the truth is it's time for another one. But that it's a perennial seller. It still sells. The audio is very popular. The ebook and the hard book are still very popular, and it's still a little unreal, as you know, to see your own book in print. It's kind of cool. I do need to do a new book though, because the baby is a baby in that book. And now my youngest is 11 and my oldest is almost 23. So I need to update. Baby Barefoot is 11 and in sixth grade.
Isn't that something? That is just mind blowing. Yeah. So, you know, mine are officially grown. In fact, my kids' names, they don't know this, but I've renamed them Grown and Gone. And 26 and 23, almost 27 and 24. I mean, to think that I have a son approaching 30.
Yikes.
Yikes is right.
Yeah, see, I say we gauge ourselves by our youngest. So, see, I have one in sixth grade. I'm still in the elementary school game. So, there you go.
Yeah, that is something. Here's Carrie's website. Make sure you guys go check out carriewilkerson.com. And I like that it's a very minimalist site. You want to find out what's going on with her, where you can hear her speak or hire her to speak. Because I see the pictures and the videos of you in front of audiences, and they're massive audiences. Like, you now get to speak in front of thousands of people. I have to confess, I'm a little jealous.
It pays the same as small audiences. I don't make any more for the big audiences than the small audiences.
Can I still be jealous?
You can still be jealous if you want to.
Just a little jealous. Let's talk about your transition. Right. Because when you got into this, as you said earlier, you weren't happy with your physical figure. You had some other emotional things going on and you turned things around. So I know, you know, I always tell people, don't talk about your stuff publicly when you're going through it. That's, you know, and people do that.
Don't use your audience as therapy. I learned that from Paul Evans. Don't use your audience as therapy. Let them learn from it after you're through it. But don't drag them through the muck with you.
Yes.
So a lot of my audience didn't know. I had lost a lot of weight before I started on the journey, but even after I started speaking, I've lost 80 pounds in the last few years. So I've lost a total of 150 pounds now and paid off multiple six figures in debt. And I'm a Dave Ramsey success story. He would be so proud. And you know, dealt with depression. Of course, who wouldn't be depressed in that much debt and that much weight? Have dealt with, you know, I have a son with special needs that are permanent and dealt with infertility for years, been through an adoption journey and, you know, just thing after thing after thing. So the fact is, you say I turn things around. And the fact is, we both know that I'm a woman of faith. And so I believe that only the Lord can turn things around in my life. But I have to be willing to do the footwork, right? I have to be willing to plant the seed and I have to be willing to harvest. I can pray about it, but I got to show up and put the effort in so that he can bless that. But I would say it's still an everyday journey. I mean, just because we're positive and just because we're public and just because we have a profile and a platform doesn't mean things are perfect in our lives. Mm-hmm. And
so what was the turning point? What was the, I'm assuming it was a decision you made, but what triggered that? And then what gave you the faith to believe that you weren't, as you know, you weren't going to do, as Yoda would say, there is no try, only do.
Yeah, that's in my book. I quote Yoda, even though I've never seen one single scene of any Star Wars movie. We can still be friends.
It's yeah, true. I'm good with that. Look, the all you need to see are the first three that were released. Everything else is garbage.
The 70s ones. The 70s ones, but I've not seen any of them, but I do know that. And I do believe that you have to make a decision that you're done with what's going on right now. You have to make a decision that you're not going to be a victim, even if you created your own mess, or even if it's something that happened to you, you decide how you're going to respond to it and how you're going to pick yourself and carry forward from that. And I think that when we wallow in the victim mentality or the circumstantial mentality, there's not a lot that we can do to serve other people. We really have to say, okay, that was up until today, and now I'm going to do differently. So my turning point wasn't that I was like fat enough that I broke a chair or needed a seatbelt extender or any of those things, even though I was 266 pounds. It really was, my depression is what had me make a decision. So my older two are adopted siblings from foster care. And when you adopt, you stand before a judge and you basically say, till death do us part. You basically vow to that judge that those kids might as well be your birth kids and that you are committing to them no matter what. And so at a point when I was really, really dark and they were 4 and 5, the older two were 4 and 5, I was in debt, I was in fat, and I was in a mess.
You got your baby saying hi.
Yeah, those are the new kids.
Well, so, I think you should, can we see your new kid?
Oh, they're back in London. No, they won't come if I call them.
They don't want to be on. They're like, no, we hate Facebook.
So I have two more rescues. Come here. Come here. Yeah, let's see. Okay, this is Huckabee. That's Huck. He's London, come here. And then she was a puppy, so we got them both at the same time because it seemed like a good idea. So this is London, the puppy. So she's
Oh, hi, London.
She's 2, and Huck is 5, and I'm going to shut the door. Stop it.
When the puppies want attention, you have to give it to them. It's just
there's a very dangerous vehicle on the street, I'm sure, that they're barking at. Yep. So at that point, I said, you know, my journal entries at that time were, I don't know that anybody would notice if I was gone. I don't know what value that I bring. I don't know that I'm making the world a better place, et cetera, et cetera. And I was in a really dark place of despair. And then I remembered standing in front of that judge and acknowledging that my kids had already lost, had ties severed with one set of parents, and that I said to him, I would do everything in my power to be there for the rest of their lives. And so it was that promise to the judge that then had me go, okay, well, if I'm staying, some things have to change. Some decisions have to change. And it really was that kind of a self-aware, rational decision of, what do I need to change? Well, we can't change everything overnight, right? I can't say, oh, I need to lose 150 pounds because that sabotages us, that buries us. So I have to say, what can I do to be better tomorrow than I was today? And I really became a series of small mindful decisions, small intentional decisions to do what I call move the needle, right? So just, okay, I'm just going to drink water for a while. I'm going to switch to water. Okay, I'm going to cut packaged foods. And it was one decision at a time that turned everything around. And so, you know, we tend to dismiss the little things, but the little things really are what matter the most. They're the little things that get us in those messes, and they're the little things that get us out of those messes. We want to chalk it up to one big event, like, oh, my mother's been in the hospital, so I've put on 30 pounds. Yes and no. Your mother's been in the hospital, so you've been making a series of bad eating choices or drive-through choices or whatever. The little things have added up to the 30 pounds, not the one thing. And the one thing's not going to get you out. It has to be a series of those little things. So,
what was the name of Darren Hardy's book on this topic?
Slight Edge.
It was another one about incremental changes.
I thought it was The Slight Edge.
Somebody look that up for me on Amazon. It's a small book, and I never can remember the title, but it made an impact on me because it shows how these little bitty is a one word title.
The compound effect.
Compound effect. That's actually three words, not one word. Yeah.
I now have Pomeranian hair in my lip gloss.
Oh, that's great. That adds value. So let me ask you this question. I remember there was a time where I was going through a lot of emotional stuff, upheaval in marriage and my business, and I was too heavy for what I wanted to be. I'm still a little too heavy for what I want to be. But I made a decision, as you talk about. When you made your decision, did you know that you were going to get where you were going? Or were you circumspect? You know, I'm gonna try to do this, or was it truly I'm going to do this today and succeed at it?
Okay, that's a really great question, because our mind is wired to only believe what we have seen, if that makes sense. I think I saw that in one of Dr. Cloud's books or Batterson's book about how your brain, you don't understand what you're seeing if you don't have context. So I didn't know what that would look like for me to get under a certain weight, because I had never been under that certain weight. So I didn't say, oh, I'm going to get down to size 4. I'd never been a size 4. When I graduated high school, I was a 12. When I got married, I was a 12. And so I really had no context. So I couldn't say, oh, I'm going to get to a 4 or I'm going to get to 120 pounds no matter what. I really did, in order to make it achievable, I really had to say, I'm just going to be better than I am today. And that's not a cop out, but it's the reason why so many of us sabotage, because those months that you look in the mirror and you're less than what you've ever been, or you're thinner than what you've ever been, or you look different, or you don't recognize yourself. Those are the months that people start regaining, because they're getting back to a comfortable place or to what they've seen, to what they can believe. We have to push through that non-belief and know there's something coming. I remember very specifically a day my dad passed me in a room. He and my mom came to my church for something, and he passed me. He didn't recognize me. And I stopped, and it shook me. Like, I wasn't excited about that. It shook me. And all the fat girl stuff in me started to rise up again, and all the unbelief and all the who do I think I am and all of that at one time. It really shook me. And I had to spend a few days saying, it's not because I don't belong here. It's just because I haven't been here before. And we have to do that. I know, like, Dad, I'm right here. He heard me. He heard me, but he couldn't see me, right? Which anybody that knows me knows you can always hear me and identify the voice, but he couldn't see me. So that being said, financially, a lot of people that do really well in business, they hit a wall and they sabotage and they start going backwards and losing income and losing stuff because they can't believe where they are or don't believe where they're going. So the fact is, sometimes we can't envision the end goal. We just have to envision a day at a time. And that's okay too. It's author Frank McKinney runs the Ultra Badwater Marathon. It's 100 and something miles. When he started training for it, he was only doing 8 miles a week. And when he ran a mile, his trainer said to his trainer, do you really think I can do that? Do you really think I can do 151 miles? He said, well, Can you do what you just did 150 times? Can you really just do one more than you've done before? And that's how he trains every single time. He just runs that same mile 150 times because the thought of 150 miles, it's too big. It's too much.
Yeah. That's an elephant that you don't want to eat. You don't want one at a time.
No. So just be better tomorrow than you were today and then the next day. And knowing that some days we're going to backslide or some days we're going to put on a pound or and we just have to tackle it again. Otherwise, we'll just defeat ourselves before we start.
Mm-hmm. I want to jump back a few years to 2010. By the way, I want to pick you up an echo. I don't know. Are you wearing headsets or earbuds or something?
I have some. I'll find them while you're talking.
Pop them in while I'm talking here for a moment.
Find them if the kids haven't stolen them.
So it was 2010. You invited me to come speak at your boss event in Dallas, Texas. And what I don't know if you knew at the time, but my marriage was falling apart that weekend, literally that weekend. I think I did tell you. And it was a bittersweet weekend because I knew that things were taking a really devastating turn personally. At the same time, you also invited Zig Ziglar to come speak at that event, not to equivocate the two. It's just it added a little cushion to the pain that was happening. And Zig was the guy who inspired me. He was the first book that I read in, you know, a personal development realm. It was See You at the Top. And then I read Secrets of Closing the Sale, and I bought his tapes, and I took Zig with me everywhere. And I really credit him. I don't have a lot of role models. I could say God is my role model because, you know, perfect. But in terms of human role models, I don't have very many. And I had the opportunity to sit down with Zig and tell him what he meant to me and share the stage with him. And I just want to thank you for that because, you know, he's left now. And of course, his son Tom is carrying on his legacy. But I wanted to thank you because it was a real impactful time for me to be there. And it was right at the beginning of my transformation.
I do remember. And I remember the reason you shared that with me. First of all, I'm just that person. I'm that person that people feel comfortable spilling their things to. But I remember Mary was supposed to come with you that weekend. Mm-hmm. And I was so disappointed she wasn't there. And so you confided in me that there was stuff happening. And truthfully, I remember looking back at that time and thinking if Zig hadn't been coming that weekend, I don't think you would have come. I think you would have probably come up with a reason because that's the space you were in at that moment. I think you would have come up with a reason not to come. But Zig being there and sharing the stage with Zig was too good to miss. And I believe it probably encouraged you in a whole different way, as well as being able to talk to somebody that wasn't going to judge you or wasn't going to come up with, you know, lots of fixes, but would just listen and then pray with you through it for the next couple of years. So I do remember, and that was a really special time for a lot of us because we got to meet Zig and hang out with Zig and have our pictures with Zig. And it was one of the last public appearances that he did, before.
It was a little hard because he had to have, you know, his son and his daughter.
Well, he had his fall at that point, and so his memory, you know, was a problem. But he was still amazing and still him. So that was good stuff. But going back to what we talked about a minute ago, it wouldn't have served the audience well if you had gotten up and said, this is what I'm going through, and I'm here anyway, and et cetera, et cetera. That wouldn't have served anybody. It just would have dragged the audience through different drama. And that's not always a positive thing.
Don't be a drama llama.
Don't think that your drama makes you authentic. Don't use authentic as an excuse. Listen, you asked me if I was going to title this anything today, what would I title it? And I said, you know, your beliefs can be dangerous. We talked a little bit about the news before we logged on. The news, which is not playing in my house and that I'm not tuning into as much as possible, because I believe our beliefs are so core to what happens tomorrow and the day after that and how our family legacy is built. But you have to realize that you can't believe everything that you think. And you have to realize that other people's beliefs can be wrong and they don't have to be your beliefs, but you also have to believe some of your beliefs are wrong. So when I was heavy, my belief was that's just my DNA. That's just how I've always been and how I always will be. And that belief was wrong. And that belief was dangerous because it served me in letting me stay in that comfort zone. A belief was I'm just not good with money. A belief was I'm disorganized. I'm late all the time. I'm a chaotic young mom. I'm too busy, too stressed, too whatever. These things that we're believing about ourselves are not serving us. And we have to believe something different. And we get to choose our beliefs. We have as a culture believed things about people groups, denominations, political affiliations, races, countries. We have believed things that then we find out later was wrong, was unfounded, was dangerous.
And that's hard. It is, you know, if we've grown at all as humans, we have been able to say, you know, I believed something and I discovered I was wrong and I was willing to adapt. It takes a lot of courage. And I know to so many people that they are stuck and you can't persuade me otherwise anything, because to do so feels like an attack on their identity.
Or an attack on their family, or an attack on their heritage, or an attack on their own personal culture. And we have to be, ground in our convictions that are absolute truth, but then everything that's not absolute truth, we have to know and be open to something different. And we have to be open to believing things that are different than what we've always heard or always been taught or that we have assumed. And probably we're not going to get that on Facebook. We're not going to get our new education on Facebook or the news, because confirmation bias is such a real thing. Mm-hmm. We look for reasons to keep believing what we already believe. So that's why I don't watch things like the hearings the last few days. I don't watch that. None of that is going to change my mind, probably. It's going to be every media person telling me their confirmation bias and why that's affirmed. No matter which channel you go to, no matter what perspective you see, it's going to be their confirmation bias. And so why would I just barrage myself with that and toxify myself?
So boy, this opens up so many questions. The first one is, how do you think somebody can get the courage to open themselves up to say, you know, maybe I'm missing it on this thing? Where do you have to be able to do that?
I think it comes in relationships. I think that I have a hard time affirming a bias about a people group or a belief when I'm sitting face to face with them, looking into their eyes, having a conversation. I dare you to love someone that you believe differently than. I dare you to have coffee with them or a conversation with them. Look them into the eyes, because when I look them in the eyes, I know that God loves them. And so if God loves them, then I need to listen. It doesn't necessarily mean they're going to change my mind, but they might change my heart. And that's maybe what we're scared of, is having our heart change. So I say, if you have a problem with another race or another gender or another orientation, another denomination, another political affiliation, another generation, sit down with them and have a conversation with them. I believe we're more alike than we are different.
Not an argument?
Not an argument. I don't argue.
You know,
I don't argue.
That's wise. It's wise.
Maybe with my teenagers, because I'm right. But as far as with other humans, I don't argue. I listen. I ask questions.
So
I believe that's biblical, honestly.
I think you're right. And I never plan the questions for my interviews, because I know that once I start having a conversation with somebody, it's going to be fascinating and it's going to lead down all these roads. I think I've already forgotten more questions than I was going to ask, and they'll come back around. But there's one in particular. You talk about talking to your children and training your children. And in the meantime, there is this circus going on in the media And there is a circus going on in our Senate. Without the political aspect of it, how do we train our boys and our girls, our children, to process this? And how do we use this to be instructive for them? What to do, what not to do?
I grew up in a house where we didn't talk about a lot of main events or political things. It just wasn't a thing. They believed what they believed, and it wasn't a dinner conversation. They didn't teach us how to think politically or how to process a lot of that. At the same time, our schools were a lot less political then. There was a lot less conversation on campus than I believe there is now. So with my kids, honestly, one of the reasons I start the conversations is because I want to know what's being said at school. And I want to know what the kids are saying. I want to know what the teachers are imposing upon them. Mm-hmm. And I want to know what they're thinking, because honestly, if you're raising your kids to be intentional and intelligent and informed, then sometimes we get a different perspective from them, right? So I will ask them, what do you think about that? And you know, this is going on right now. What have you heard at school about that? Is that from a teacher? Is that from a kid? What do you think about that? How do you feel about that? What should we discuss about that? Today, to be fair, we discussed situations. We discussed consent. We discussed making decisions before you're in certain scenarios. We discussed alcohol and the way it impairs you as on the offensive as well as the defensive. We talked about ways to have fun without alcohol. We talked about, you know, and my kids range from 11 to 14 to 21 to 23. So we talked about all of these things. We did not talk about Republican versus Democrat. We did not talk about he said or she said. We didn't. I have three daughters. I have three strong, beautiful, amazing, fun to be around daughters. But I also want them to be intelligent and informed. I don't want them necessarily to feel persecuted, like they don't have the same rights, but I do want them to be strong in their own right and in their own intentionality, their own decision-making. So today we had great conversations about what does consent look like? How do you put yourself in certain situations? When do you know when to extract yourself from a situation? What does groupthink mean? What is mob mentality? What is, you know, what is signaling? What are some things to be wary of? And what can you talk to me about? What can you talk to me about? What can you bring to me? In what case would you not tell me something? And my kids, thankfully, because of our conversations that we're having, my kids, I believe 100% would tell you, I could come tell you anything, even if it was because of decisions I made. I could come tell you without fear, you are my safe place. And I think that if anything, that's how we take world events without biasing them politically and say, okay, what conversations can this start at home? They don't need to hear me rail against a political party or rail against a gender. Here's the thing, I don't have anything against men. I love men, I'm a big fan. Big fan of men. Right? Married one, have loved several. My dad is an amazing man. I have three brothers that are amazing men. I have a son, you know, and I'm hoping that we are raising up a generation of amazing men. But it starts with anti-inflammatory conversations in the house so that they know how to process these things. Now, I don't know who's right and who's wrong. I don't know which place to side on. All I know is what I can do with my kids is start some conversations and teach them how to process and prevent in some cases.
Yeah. So like, you know, basically, you know, if I were to talk to my son back, you know, in the college years, I'm like, you know, if there's a party and there's going to be hookers and blow there, don't go. You know, would that be a good idea? You know, just and really, we have to protect our boys just as much as we have to protect our girls, because whether this thing happened, you know, with this justice or not, what we're looking at is something that happened 36 years ago can be brought up. And if true, you got to own up to it. And if false, somebody's name could be smeared falsely and a career destroyed. So maybe it's a good idea, boys, to keep a journal no matter what. Keep a calendar where you were and what you were doing, and then don't do stupid stuff.
Well, you know, and I can't even address all that. My son, I have one son, and my son has special needs. And so some of these things don't pertain to my son as far as his decision making. But I did have three brothers. And I will have to say that I hope none of them ever gets appointed to anything, because I don't even know what they're going to dredge up on them.
Oh, my gosh. Who would want to run for office? I mean, if you listen, I went to college. I never assaulted anybody, which I'm happy to say. You know, I wasn't that stupid, but I got myself in situations that,
well, and like I said, I don't know where I'm coming down on this. I think at some point it's almost impossible to discern truth. What I do know is that intentionality matters with our kids. And so we are having a lot of conversations without me feeling like the news has to be on 24/7 for them to be informed. I'm going to filter that a little bit, and I'm going to inform them and start some good conversations. So what we believe matters. What we believe about ourselves matters. And a lot of times the reason we're getting in trouble is because our beliefs need to be shifted, whether it's about ourselves or the people around us or the opportunities that present themselves. So getting a little bit back on track with that, I'm teaching my kids that yes, you can believe big, big things about yourself and believe the best about other people, unless they're strongly signaling that you don't need to, in which case we don't hate them, we don't bias against them, we just maybe make some different choices.
You know, this you mentioned racism as one of the things, and it just, and you mentioned how we are more alike then we're different. And it's amazing to me that we are 99.9% the same as human beings. The only difference is the pigment of our skin, right? That we judge people based on that is just so shallow and so ludicrous.
It really is. And you know, Joel, the fact is, we are so caught up in compartmentalizations. If we even just want to look at how people paint a broad brush about lawyers, accountants, school teachers, internet marketers, you know, public speakers, authors, people with money, people without money, people on this side of town, people on that side of town, people from this high school. It starts little bitty because we have such this need to categorize people. And I think it's just dangerous. I think
why do we need to do that? What is your take on that?
Because it helps us excuse the action or privilege that we don't feel like we have ourselves. Maybe.
Interesting.
Or it may just be comfort zone, or it may just be because we can't run our mouths about anything intelligently, so we might as well be talking about other people. You know, one of my favorite things in my self-talk is, why am I even worried about her? When I find myself comparing or criticizing or judging, why am I even worried about her or him? I need to worry about the girl in the mirror, being the best girl in the mirror that I could be, and worrying that I'm in alignment with my creator and the people in my life. I need to not worry about what everybody else is doing and what everybody else is saying. So, you know, protein forms, we're humans. God created us. God loves us. And I'm called to love other people. And it doesn't mean everybody's perfect. And it doesn't mean I justify everything that everybody does. It just means that I love people, period, end of story. At the end of the day, I can only control what I do.
And we're mostly water. That's what I find funny. Like, well, you mentioned that. So there's a question I've always wondered from somebody who's dealt with being obese. What do you do physically? Oops, Carrie dropped off a second there. That's okay. She'll be back. Well, let me pull you back in here. She's like, what happened?
You said the word obese and then we blanked out. It's like, yeah. It's one of those screen words.
How does your body repair itself?
It doesn't. It doesn't. I'm like a Shar-Pei puppy. I have more roles than a Shar-Pei puppy, and it's not cute. So it depends on your genetics, honestly. It depends on your DNA. Some people snap back, but after that many years of 150 extra pounds and two very large babies, you know, it just didn't bounce back. So I have had some skin removed. Like I had my arms I'm very proud of these scars right here. I had 6 inches on each arm removed. And before anybody wants to message and say, I just should have done curls or whatever, listen, you can build up the muscle all you want, but that doesn't change the composite of your skin. So that being said, there is nothing you can do to shrink that skin back. So you just have to decide, would you rather stay heavy or would you rather have extra skin? I chose extra skin. Little by little, I'm hopefully going to have that fixed. But if not, it's no big deal because we've got duct tape and spandex and leggings. So it's duck all it. Good.
Duck it, baby. Yeah.
Duct tape it. Me and MacGyver, we're good with duct tape.
I understand that. I think that the fact that we can do an operation and try to repair some of those damage, self-damage, or due to circumstances beyond our control. What do you think of what's happening in, especially in this generation where Instagram and selfies, and we have to look, you know, we're looking airbrushed. I posted a picture on Instagram just the other day where I airbrushed wrinkles off myself and blemishes, and, you know, I look shiny and younger. What message do you think we're sending, and how do we stop this?
Yeah, that's a great, the flawless generation. That's a great question. And so when I went to my plastic surgeon about it, I told him, I said, you know, honestly, doctor, I'm struggling with this as far as vanity. He said, Carrie, let me ask you a question. He said, vanity, I feel like, he said, why are you doing this? I said, well, every time I look in the mirror, I see all my years of past mistakes. He said, it sounds to me like this is grace. It sounds to me like you're forgiving yourself and you're moving forward. He said, your goal is not to look better than everybody else or to be a cover model. Your goal is to stop beating yourself up with 6 inches of extra skin, to free yourself from those external signs of damage. And I said, that's exactly right. He said, vanity is I want to look better, 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 younger, 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 younger. He said, I think you're doing repair. He said, there's a difference. So that helped me a lot. It really did. And my family was very supportive. We've never done anything to augment or to shift or to up-level my appearance. It really has been corrective. That being said, my ninth grader was in a debate last year as an eighth grader about whether kids should be able to get plastic surgery without their parents' permission. Now, we had never talked about this. My kids, I'm very open with them about what I've had done. But my daughter was very eloquent about this. She said, you know, I feel like it depends on their motives. If they have a cleft palate or their ears are way out and they're obstructing or they're really causing them major bullying, I believe that, first of all, they shouldn't have to do it without their parents' permission. If they and their parents are on the same team about it, then it should be something they do in collaboration, she said. But if it's stuff to make you look cuter or better or more popular, she said, then the fact is we need more character training and integrity training before, you know, we do something like that. So I do think it's a slippery slope. I think tweaking yourself to reverse aging. I mean, I'm really proud of my laugh lines and my smile lines, and I earned those, and I laugh a lot. And I
don't, you know, don't, if you get too close, you might fall in.
There you go. For 46, I am super proud. I mean, I think I look amazing for 46. I've never done anything to my face. I do use makeup, and that's important. That helps me. But the fact is, I think a lot of people are using external measures to fix a vacancy in the heart, and it's not going to work. And they have to work on the internal before the external really matters.
So as we get ready to close, I want to give you the floor to talk about how to do that. You take as much time as you want. I'm going to put myself off screen and solo you, and I'm going to give you the soapbox here. Carrie Wilkerson, go nuts.
Yeah. How do we work on the internal, you know, so that we're not so worried about the external? I think we have to really be in alignment. And I love the word Dr. Henry Cloud uses. He says integris. When we are who we say that we are, and we believe what we say we believe, and we have integrity from our inside to our outside, to our actions, to our words, that means we're integrous and we have full integrity. When you're in full integrity and when you're in full alignment, you become more beautiful. You become more attractive. You become magnetic. You almost become unstoppable in a lot of ways. And you sure become someone who can live without fear of being discovered. You know, that's one thing I loved about Zig Ziglar. He had a bad memory from what I understand, even younger. And he told his kids, I don't have to have a good memory because I always tell the truth. I don't have to remember what I've told people because I always tell the truth. And so I love that. There's something really deep about that. But I think if we work on our insides and being okay with who we are and also striving to be better and fulfill the purpose, and I will get scriptural for a minute. I say fulfill the purpose that our Creator sets out for us. If we're created in His image, we're created in His image. We're created for leadership. We're created for sacrificial giving. We're created for service. We're created for beauty. We're created for a power through Him, not of our own power, but of His. So that being said, when I believe that about my Creator, how could I not strive every day to put down a candy bar or to step away from the bag of chips or to speak more kindly and gently to others or to speak more sternly to myself? I think that's how we start doing that internal character work. I think, Joel, part of the issue is we want to excuse ourselves and fix everybody else. And so that's why we paint everybody else with the broad brush. If they would do that, then I could be better. If the spouse were better at this, then I could be more loving. If my kids were neater and better behaved, then I'd be calmer and the house would be more clean. You know what? I think it was Gandhi maybe who said, be the change. Be the change that you want to see. And it's true. Stop wishing everybody else was better and just be better your own self. Be better your own self. Love people. Encourage people. And inspire people to be better themselves. I think that really is the only way for a lasting change. And then I think we have to worry less about our crow's feet and less about, you know, our less than perfect skin or less about, you know, the fact that everything is going south because we're getting, you know, older or whatever that happens to be. Like, I'm personally shrinking. I'm personally getting shorter as my kids get taller. I'm becoming that little mama in my age already. So instead of fighting that and moaning that and grieving that, I think when we're integrous, as Dr. Cloud says, that we can embrace those changes and that season and really enjoy who we're becoming and who we are.
As
I don't know, it's just a theory.
As inspiring as I knew you would be, Kerry Wilkerson. Gang, go check out her website. Here it is right here. At kerrywilkerson.com. And I think you have your sizzle reel there where people can see you speaking live.
Yeah. And we also have, I have a 7-day video series, a free video series people can go through. It's at kerrywilkerson.com/7DAYS.
Oh, let's
put that in the chat. It's not visible anywhere right now because we're overhauling some things. So kerrywilkerson.com/7DAYS. And you get 7 days of free video coaching and or inspiration. There it is.
Yep. Boom. KerryWilkerson.com/7 days. Go here and put your email address right there. And just like that, I'll put mine in. Get access now. Boom. Instant access. And you're probably going to ask me to verify my email, which is a good thing. So you guys can go and check that out. Kerry, you're the best.
Thank you, Joel.
And I want to share one comment with you that was posted here. Where is it? Oh, Annette said this. She thought
you thought I was 36. There we go. 10 years younger. I was 36 when I met Joel. True. That, I was 36 with baby barefoot.
That's true. Well, just for the record, I am 54 now, and but I am eternally 12.
Eternally 12.
On the inside. Yeah.
Let me inspire everybody. My dad turns 80 this year. And the truth is he goes to other countries and rebuilds disaster torn areas. And he has no idea that he's 80. He believes that he's 60 and he's amazing. So the fact is we're only as old as we believe that we are. Mm.
Thanks so much, Kerry. You're the best. I'm going to drop you down here, but don't leave. I'm going to talk to you after I finish up here. And gang, I hope you go check out her website at carriewilkerson.com. Follow her on Twitter, Facebook, all the places. And thanks so much for joining me on my little respite here in Breckenridge. Again, for those of you that join late, you can see the leaves are changing. Look at those beautiful yellows over there. The mountains are actually over there, and I can't show you them from where I am. But anyway, thanks for watching as always. And those of you who caught it in the replay, you can still comment. You can still share if you think somebody else would benefit from the wisdom that was given today from my guest, Kerry Wilkerson. Catch you guys next week back in Denver. Until then, well, you know what to do, right? Those three words, do good things.